First and foremost, are there any updates on the coalition discussions between ACT and National?
I can't give you any updates, but what I understand is that the leaders of the parties are engaging in setting out essentially what a future government coalition between ACT and National will look like. But I don't have any updates on how that's going.
And after a few weeks of these discussions, do you see the possibility of ACT making any compromises with its bottom lines?
Well, I think the purpose of having set out, I think we recorded 87 policy releases in the last 3 years, is that we have a lot of things we want to achieve, but we're not going into negotiations saying there are bottom lines. Everything is able to be negotiated, but we do have principles that we think are important when it comes to any policy. So that is reducing the role of government, increasing the size of the private sector and the private economy, because that's where wealth is created, minimising the interference that government and its agencies and other people have and how you use your property, so you have good quality resource management reform based on property rights, and essentially enshrining the principles of liberal democracy, free speech, freedom of association, and lower taxes in all of the policy approaches. So we just start from that basis and negotiate from there.
Now, the Te Tiriti referendum was a key point for ACT. Can we still expect to see this referendum in the future?
Well, the referendum is actually the end point of a process that ACT would champion, which is to define the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi, which have only ever been interpreted by judges, but actually to have Parliament and elected members define them in a way that then allows the courts to interpret them much more simply in the future. The problem we've had since 1987 is that successive activist judges, right up to the Supreme Court, have defined the principles of the treaty to mean some kind of partnership, which then provides for unelected iwi, for example, to have decision-making over natural resources and even three waters assets, if you take it to the extreme that the previous Labor government did. ACT says that's not helpful for going forward as a well-functioning liberal democracy. We need to make sure that a Treaty Principles Act defines the principles, that the Crown alone is sovereign and has the right to govern, that your property is secure, your taonga, your property rights are secure, so that means you can use your land how you see fit, as long as you're not affecting the way other people use common resources, like water, for example. And thirdly, we're all equal before the law, and in terms of access to services, which should be based on need. We think they're very, very simple principles that any of New Zealand's 5 million people would agree to, particularly those who see our future as an open, liberal society where we value the rule of law.
Moving on to the Israel-Palestine war, we haven't heard a lot from ACT on where their current stance is, especially with the Israeli government's intensified bombing of Gaza over the last few days. Now, where does the party stand?
Well, ACT was very quick to point out that the previous government's foreign minister, Nanaia Mahuta, had made an equivocating statement, essentially not identifying that Hamas's actions in Israel were a terrorist act. And they certainly haven't even identified Hamas as a terrorist organisation, which is what its charter says it is, because the organisation intends to destroy Israel and drive its people out of the land of Israel. Now, ACT is very, very quick to call out the Labor government, which is now in a caretaker role, on their lack of a decisive statement. And that is why you've seen shortly afterwards the caretaker Prime Minister Chris Hopkins make a clarifying statement, because what's happened in Israel is absolutely vile and represents an attack not just on Israeli and Jewish people, but also on Western liberal democratic values, where people choose to freely associate in a state, choose to identify with a nation, and that is their right. The challenge is then, well, how does the international community provide for, however it may, the welfare of civilians in the Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip, which is essentially under the control of a terrorist state, terrorist entity, of how on earth do you provide for the welfare of civilians in that scenario? It's very difficult to see how we could do that. I mean, it wasn't easy, or it wasn't possible, let alone easy, to provide welfare to civilians in Mosul, for example, when it was under ISIS control. Essentially, the only solution there was to remove ISIS from control of large metropolitan areas in Iraq. So I have no vision as to how this might end, but it was certainly a very difficult position for the people of living in the Gaza Strip under Hamas government right now.
The Palestinian death toll has passed 8,000, with more than 3,000 being children. This far surpasses what we saw in Israel following the Hamas attacks. The power and water has been turned off. Food is scarce. I guess my question is, how high does the death toll in Palestine have to reach before this can be considered a genocidal attack from Israel and not just self-defense?
Well, that's a pretty shocking question in and of itself. This is not a soccer game where you count scores and who has the most deaths on each side. This is a matter of survival for Israel. It's under attack from a terrorist entity that is vowed to destroy it. And as I pointed out, it's probably the only similar equivalent situation we've seen in the past few decades is when ISIS took over the city of Mosul and then fought bitterly to stop the Iraqi government and its coalition partners, which included New Zealand at the time, from recovering that city and restoring dignity to the people who lived there. So I think that should be our focus as to how could we provide support to those countries which are engaged in essentially a fight for survival against a ruthless, murderous terrorist entity, so that they can actually liberate that territory from its terrorist rulers. And I think that needs to be the focus of New Zealand's government when it is reconstituted.
Israel is an occupying state in Palestine. It has occupied and settled in Palestine for around 75 years. Will the New Zealand government consider this when they are making their decisions and having their discussions?
I think the interpretation is flawed. The United Nations approved the establishment of the Israeli state in 1947. So it's not correct to say that Israel is an occupying state. They're a legitimate state, which has a right to exist. This language, which describes Israel as an occupying state, is dehumanizing language. It's not helpful for New Zealanders to engage in that kind of a dehumanizing language when we're talking about people whose very lives are at risk, who've been threatened by Hamas, a terrorist organization, and of course its neighbors to the north and in the state of Lebanon, the Hezbollah organization, both of which are Iranian proxies. So I think we need to be very, very wary in New Zealand of adopting the language of these terrorist entities when we're talking about a Western liberal democracy, the only democracy that actually upholds human rights in the Middle East. So, I think that's really where New Zealand should be focusing its efforts, is reinforcing how important it is, how rare, how precious democracy is, and why nations who are under attack and whose people fear for their lives should receive the support of New Zealand.
Now, you mentioned the Iraq war. During this war, the U.S. used the weapons of mass destruction as reason to invade and start war in the region. Many Western countries at the time supported this. However, as we all know, not only were the weapons never found, but the impact continues to affect the region. Are you at all worried that if New Zealand supports Israel's actions at the moment, we will find ourselves in a similar situation as what preceded the Iraq war?
If you think about the situation that Israel is in and what support New Zealand could provide, I mean, New Zealand is a country of 5 million people with a defence force that the previous Labour Green government has run down. It's not clear how we could provide material support. We're really only able to provide a training element to support the Ukrainian forces in the UK where they're going for training. But I think it's just important to make sure that in our government statements and actions that we reinforce our support for the only Western liberal democracy in the Middle East, where people, no matter what their ethnicity and no matter what their gender or how they identify, have equal rights. Israel's that country, and we should support Israel in any way that we can to maintain their nationhood and to protect their people.
Now, you're saying that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East and that everyone has equal rights. However, Palestinians do not have equal rights as Israelis. They are locked into areas like the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. So how does that work exactly?
Well, Israel withdrew from Gaza and has had no influence at all on their governing arrangements since 2005. Which is when the people of Gaza elected Hamas, which has as its charter the destruction of Israel. That was their choice. And in the West Bank, of course, that's been under the control of the Palestinian Authority for many, many decades, although they've only chosen to have one four-yearly election. That was the first one. I think their current president, Mahmoud Abbas, is now into about his 18th year of a four-year term. So it can't solve all of the problems of the Middle East sitting here in Auckland, but what we certainly can do is recognise that if you're a citizen of Israel, and no matter whether you're an Arab or a Jew or a Christian, how you identify, you have equal rights there in the same way as New Zealanders do in New Zealand. And that's something that is important to acknowledge, and probably the most important thing that needs to be preserved in the future, and that should be New Zealand's focus. That's probably all we can do as a nation of 5 million.
Now, over the weekend, there were many pro-Palestine protests all over the country, calling for the government to demand a ceasefire. Now, is the ACT Party willing to do anything to support Palestine in this time and support the Palestinian community in Aotearoa?
It was really disappointing to see what you described as pro-Palestine protests essentially look like they were targeting Jewish people and Israel. I've seen images of people destroying Israeli flags and chanting the most horrific things about Jewish people and Israelis. I don't think New Zealanders should participate in that kind of behaviour. People who come to New Zealand for a better life should respect and understand why life is better in New Zealand. The ACT Party is very, very strong on human rights and dignity and individual freedom and liberty. But that applies to all New Zealanders, so they're free to go and protest. But I think we've seen their true colours, particularly some members of the Green Party like Marama Davidson, expressing views that are frankly vile and anathema to most New Zealanders.
I spoke to John Minto, the chair of the Palestinian Network Authority in New Zealand, and he said that they had, during these protests, especially at the beginning, had taken moments of silence for both Israeli deaths and Palestinian deaths. So clearly the majority is not so against the Jewish community and is trying to include them as well. What would you say to that majority?
Well, I wouldn't trust anything that John Minto said. He has repeatedly expressed the phrase Palestine from the river to the sea, which is Hamas's rallying cry to destroy the Jewish state. So I don't think that we should rely on the protestations of somebody with a track record and a demonstrative history of anti-Semitic pronouncements like John Minto. I think what we need to do is focus on the needs of the Jewish community in New Zealand, who many of them have told me that they are afraid, that they fear for their community, they fear for their children attending school and synagogue, and they fear for their friends and relatives, not just in Israel, but all over the world, who are coming under attack, who are being threatened by people with strongly anti-Semitic views. And I think that should be New Zealand's focus and the focus for public policymakers. I think it's outrageous that people like John Minto insist that they are creating some kind of equivalence in the way that they are acknowledging the people of Israel and Jewish people who've been affected by the atrocities on the 7th of October.